Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another inspiring episode of the Cryptic Commander. We are your hosts.
This is Onik.
And this is John Nose. Hey, that's backwards this time.
Yeah, that caught me off guard. I was not ready for that.
That's okay. I'm going to edit out the long pause anyway. But it is inspiring because there's a lot of information we got to go over. And, I've been thinking about a lot of things, Onik. Number one, there's a lot of episodes I had to catch up with, you know. And if you're not hip to it, I put out two episodes about 4 days ago in the same night. And then this morning, I think it was midnight, I started editing an episode and released it like 2 o'clock in the morning. And I put a note on there, like a long note, letting listeners know that a promise is a promise. This is getting out and there's going to be another podcast episode in a 24-hour window. So as soon as this one gets done being recorded, I'm going to edit the guy and get it out there. You know?
Okay, sweet.
Right. So a promise is a promise, and that's in the last notes, and it is what it is. So there's a lot of things we got to cover. First, importantly, is Card of the Week. Onik, you've got Card of the Week.
This is a reprint from, depends on how far back you want to go. It was reprinted in Commander Masters, but I think originally it was printed in a standard legal set in Magic 2012.
Which is a long time ago, and you want to get these cards in people's hands, you know?
Yeah, 2011. It was Modern Legal, but now this is Pioneer and, of course, Standard Legal. Rand Abolisher.
Yeah.
White. So two white mana for a 2/2, so this is a hate bear. During your turn, your opponents can't cast spells or activate abilities of artifacts, creatures, or enchantments. So a lovely sideboard piece that I don't... Off the top of my head, I'm also sure what home is going to find, but this turns off equipment, this turns off activated abilities, this turns off a lot of things that you might not even realize until it's out on the battlefield and your opponent wags their finger and say, no, you can't do that.
Yeah, we talked about, I think it was last episode, because I remember editing it this morning, that we have a card that was sideboard material. This is sideboard material.
Yeah, I think it was Torpor Orb, wasn't it?
It was an orb, but so this one right here is definitely sideboard material. It'll shut my deck down. I'm currently running in a standard. I did, and I still have on Arena this prototype deck I'm working with. This mono black and it does poison. But going back to the Cryptic Coat deck, this will shut down Cryptic Coat deck.
Yeah, I mean, it's only during your turn. So they could still do plenty of stuff.
That's fair,
but. This is a, I'm not saying it turns off decks, but this is still a sideboard piece.
You see, you can't
do a and do a bunch of weird stuff. Yeah.
It says, you think because you've mapped the land, you own the land, you own an idea, nothing more. That's telling to it, right?
Yeah, it's pretty powerful.
A 2/2 body. And with this right here, it's at a mythic rare. Was it originally in a rare?
No, every other printing was just a rare.
Mm-hmm.
So it being mythic is a bit odd.
Yeah, I agree with that, yeah.
Considering this is from the bonus sheet from the big score, which are all mythics, is like, okay, I guess, sure.
Okay, so that's going to justify why this version's a mythic?
I don't know if I don't know if it justifies it, because another card, Rest in Peace, which is like, a dollar or two,
Yeah,
that's one of the vault cards the big score cards that I pulled in my pre-release, and I'm like, out of all cards, this one? All right, whatever. But yeah, they're all mythics.
Do you have anything else to say about this guy?
No, other than it's going to be an interesting piece. I'm looking forward to seeing where it's going to show up in Standard and Pioneer. Like, this is definitely not a main deck card, unless you're playing some weird, like, Death and Taxes list or something, but even then, I don't think you would main deck it.
I'm not seeing anything in Standard with that, except for it being a, sideboard piece. And that is your Card of the Week this week.
Of course, post-rotation, things will change as well. Once new decks come up, and then this piece might show up again.
And this segment is powered by MTGStocks.com. Black Cleave Cliffs is a cheap pickup, what we're going to start off with this week. It's $6.59. Moving down slowly. I don't remember. So Innistrad or
this, I think originally was from like Scars of Mirrodin.
Okay. Well, no. Originally. Okay.
Originally, this one here is like the expedition version of it.
What would they call them? Quick lands?
Fast. Yeah, fast lands. I mean, they just got reprinted in Thunder Junction.
So for the listeners,
this No. The enemy cycle got reprinted in Thunder Junction. The allied one has been reprinted in Phyrexia All Will Be One.
Phyrexia All Will Be One, which is still currently standard legal, yeah.
Yes.
So this one right here, the Black Cleave Cliffs, is it enters the battlefield tapped unless you control two or fewer other lands. You can tap it to add black or red. Good cheap pickup. Another one, Infernal Tutor. It says tutor. It's got to be good. One black, one other sorcery. Reveal a card from your hand. Search your library for a card with the same name as that card. Reveal it. Put it in your hand. Then shuffle. It does have Hellbent. I don't even remember what that was. But if you have no cards in your hand, instead search your library for a card. Put it in your hand. Then shuffle. Well, there you go.
It's only good if you're Hellbent.
So it's 66 cents.
Yeah.
And it's still moving down. I think this is our last cheap pickup. Cruel Celebrant. I remember this being really dirt cheap in the begin with. It says 47 cents and it's moving up. So that's why we're going to put a little sense of urgency into this, Onique, because it's moving up. It is Orzhov, meaning one black, one white, a 1/2 body creature vampire. And whenever this or another creature or planeswalker you control dies, each opponent loses one life and you gain one life. It's a combo piece.
Yeah, but I mean, this is also an uncommon, so it being like 50 cents is really not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Compared to the previous one being a rare.
Mm. You know, I mean, it's a combo piece. Orzhov, usually I play mono black on this kind of aristocrats idea.
Exactly.
But there is a powerful Orzhov thing going on for the backup, you know. Number three, though, Rothulk. It's $44.09. It's up 45%. This guy, he's not a Grave Titan.
No, it looks like it wants to be a Grave Titan.
Yeah, Menace 5/5, and when he enters the battlefield, return up to X target zombie cards from your graveyard to the battlefield for X the number of opponents you have. Like we said, a wannabe, right? Now, is this
a reprint? Like, I don't remember this
card. I think it was just printed one time.
Yeah, it's just an all-new card.
Mm-hmm. One time.
Interesting.
There's a lot of mentions here today, but we're going to go to, was it number two? There's only two cards because I don't see number three anywhere. Yeah, number three was Rothulk. Got it. Yeah. Okay. There's a lot of mentions, like I said, but number two, Court of Vantress. And this is not to be confused with the Throne of Eldraine one, right? This is WOC, so Wilds of Eldraine Collector, I'm going to believe.
Commander,
okay. Court of Vantress, $14.28. This bad boy is up 208%. Enchantment, 2 blue, 2 other. When it enters the battlefield, you become the Monarch. Of course, this screams Commander. And at the beginning of your upkeep, choose up to one other target enchantment or artifact. If you're the Monarch still, you may create a token that's a copy of it. If you're not the Monarch, you may have this become a copy of it, except it has this ability. That's pretty powerful, bud.
Yeah, everyone's going crazy over Obeka. Splitter of Seconds is the rare from Thunder Junction that gives you two, or at least, or maybe about two upkeeps after combat if Obeka deals damage. Like, Obeka herself is 1 blue, black, red, so 4 mana. So, what is that, Grixis? She's a 2/5 menace. Whenever she deals combat damage to a player, you get that many additional upkeep steps after this phase. So it's just
not my playstyle, but I can see it. Yeah.
Yeah. You're just looking for anything that says the word upkeep and how you can use it to take advantage of it.
Number one, Ugin's Nexus. It's at $5 even. It's up 139%. You know, we talked about sideboard cards earlier, and this would be like the mother of all sideboard cards. It's a legendary artifact. It costs 5 colorless, and it simply says if a player would begin an extra turn, that player skips that turn instead. The second and last ability. If this would be put into a graveyard from the battlefield, instead exile it and take an extra turn after this one. What are your thoughts?
It's just a combo piece. I mean, by itself, before the spike, it was literally like $1.50, probably less, $1 as a bulk mythic.
I do see
until
this.
Yeah. You know, people were like, hey, I just realized this new card from the big score bonus sheet, esoteric duplicator.
That's what I was getting ready to say. Yep.
Yeah, that's a combo piece there.
There's whenever you sacrifice this, but you got the one from the old school, Karark dash Clan Ironworks.
Yeah, Karark Clan Ironworks or KCF for sure. That's always been a combo piece.
The engine.
Yeah. I mean, the picture is literally a furnace. So it's probably, you know, creating energy for an engine of sorts.
What does that card go for?
KCI is banned already in Modern. Say what?
What is that? Yeah, I was getting ready to ask you what that card is worth right now, the KCI.
I mean, KCI is, I think, is, I can check real quick and click on that, but it's gone up. It's maybe, I would say, beginning of the year is around $26 for the uncommon. And currently it is around 42.
Wow. Okay, so we're talking about a guy that's $5. Because it went up at 139%, earlier we saw a card jump up 45%, right? And it's at $44.09. So again, it's because of the percentage and how much this card jumped up, and yet KCI is worth more, you know?
Well, KCI didn't jump up immediately. It was a kind of like a gradual increase.
Sure. This one did, though.
Yeah, the Ugin's Nexus, just because of Esoteric Duplicator. Go ahead.
I wouldn't even think of this card. You know, with the new cards that came out, my mind's going with other combinations, especially because of some of these classic cards, like what we talked about earlier on the pre-show. The Dragon, help me out here.
Terror of the Peaks?
Terror of the Peaks, that's it. And, you know, Terror of the Peaks is coming out, and it's like, oh, man, I wish I still had that... what was it, Wilds of Invention or Wilds of Fire, whatever it was, where it's like you can play two cards and stuff. It's like all these ideas are coming back because the skeleton's not there. It's just pieces, you know?
Yeah.
And I wouldn't even think of this Nexus. Maybe Nexus of Fate or something, but not this Nexus.
Well, I mean, the Esoteric Duplicator just wants artifacts. Like almost every single card from that bonus sheet deals with artifacts or makes an artifact or whatever, and this does a little bit of both. So I'll read it off. It's 2 in a blue. So 3 mana for, ironically, an artifact clue. So it literally has a, you know, pay 2 mana, sacrifice it, draw a card. But the main thing is, whenever you sacrifice Esoteric Duplicator or another artifact, you may pay 2. If you do, at the beginning of a next end step, create a token of a copy of that artifact. So with KCI, sacrifice an artifact, you're adding mana. Don't care. You're sacrificing Ugin's Nexus. So Ugin's Nexus exiles itself, because that's his own ability, but it says when it goes into a graveyard from the battlefield, instead exile and take an extra turn after that one. Esoteric Duplicator says that you could pay 2 mana. Oh yeah, you obviously use the 2 mana there. When you do, create a copy of that token, create a token copy of the card you just sacrificed, which is Ugin's Nexus. Then you feed it into KCI once again, then you make a copy of it, and you just repeat it. So this is Infinite Turns in Mono Blue.
Nice. I love the sound of that Infinite Mono Blue together.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like Blue can already do Infinite Turns in multiple ways, but this is the new thing that's going on right now.
That's cute, because of the new cards.
Yeah, because it's a duplicator.
And those are your movers and shakers this week.
So let's talk a little bit about a pre-release. And when I mean a little bit, I mean like probably for the next like 6 hours. Okay, not 6 hours. We'll cut it down to 3.
Grab some hot cocoa. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Just you can probably like grow like cocoa beans.
So you've hinted towards opening a pre-release this weekend. You did it?
I did twice.
Twice.
And I dressed up for it.
Okay, did you wear a cowboy hat?
Yes. Oh, did you not see the picture?
No, I did not.
Oh man. Yeehaw. Let me show you. So my wife's dad is not a cowboy. He's from Texas. He has, you know, lots of property in Texas.
He likes John Wayne.
Yeah, actually. And I asked him, like, hey, do you have like a, you know, like a cowboy hat or something I could borrow? He understands I play the game, but he doesn't understand anything about it. He's like, you know, 80, 85.
He asked him for some clothes, cowboy clothes, and he said, yeah, partner.
I asked him just for the hat. Okay. And then when I went over to his place, he had two hats for me to choose from, and I just kind of picked the first thing that, you know, was closer to me, because the hat's a hat. And then he's like, oh, wait, I got boots. And I'm like, that's not going to fit, but okay, sure. What size are you? 13. Oh, I'm the same. I'm like, oh, okay, so maybe they will fit. Then he hands me a shirt, which I did not wear. Then then I'm like, you know what? Do you have a belt buckle? Well, of course I do. He goes to the back again, grabs like a belt buckle. So to John, the picture I just sent you is of me with a hat, with the belt buckle, with the boots. Of course I have jeans.
Standing next to Oko.
Yeah, so I'm standing next to a, you know, one of those cardboard stands of Oko from OTJ at my LGS acronyms. And I had a buddy of mine take a picture of me just because I wanted to show my father-in-law, because he doesn't have a cell phone that can send, he doesn't text, so he doesn't have, there's no way for me to send him a picture other than I just actually show him the phone. But I made him proud, and I wore that on my first pre-release, so on Friday.
Nice.
I did a second pre-release as well on Saturday.
I was going to ask you if you did two of them in one day, because you said you did two of them.
Yeah, one Friday, one Saturday. You did just one of them, right?
Correct. I did one of them, and it was on Sunday.
Okay.
Believe it or not. So one of the employees brought a cowboy hat in, and there was miscommunication because I thought they were going to bring in a couple of cowboy hats, you know, and I'm like, cool, because I ain't got to worry about it now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the day came, and they only had one for themselves, and I'm like, it's not really that big of a deal. We ended up playing, because I was running the store, cowboy-themed music all day long, you know, on Friday.
That's nice.
And we started with, like, saloon music, and then we did some Western cowboy songs. But then some of them, it was just like, no, this doesn't good. We had to switch it up. And just no matter what, man, it ended up being cowboy music all day long. And that was the idea. And once we got to the point where it was like, no, man, not this one, I kind of knew they didn't want people really singing. They just wanted, like, the saloon kind of thing, right?
Oh, right. Okay. Not to avoid a karaoke night.
Yeah.
During.
Yeah. Right. And the last hour I end up putting on Young Guns soundtrack 1 and 2, which is just mainly Bon Jovi, if not all Bon Jovi. And they were going down with a blaze of glory. And there was a lot of puns being thrown around. One of the cute things I thought was one of the regulars brought a friend that never came before.
Mm-hmm.
And when he put his name into the companion app, it was, you've yeed your last haw.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I know. And he put it in backwards where your last haw, you've yeed.
Oh, yeah, because, yeah,
so,
I mean,
so
depending
it can be
read, on the...
Yeah.
Display on the companion app or whatever, because normally just your last name and then your first name.
Exactly. So it came out perfect. And the next day when he came, it was the prickly pear. You know, first name, the prickly pear, last name. So the guy had definitely originality, if not, you know, a good sense of humor.
All right. So he put thought into it.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But the whole thing was very friendly. And we had some people that came out of the woodworks to come for pre-release, and ours was successful. I'm sure yours was as well.
Yeah. So when I went into my, because I sent you two more pictures. When I went on Friday, you know, I was the most dressed up out of anyone there. Two other people wearing cowboy hats. The first guy, I know his name is Owen. And I just literally walked up next to him, stood there until he recognized me because he was looking, you know, looking at his cards. And then he looked at me and I'm like, this town ain't big enough for the two of us. And then, you know, we just shared laughing. At the end of that pre-release, he and someone else was wearing the hat, and he asked me if we got a specific card. And the way he pointed at me, he just pointed at me like, hey, did you get the card? Because we're standing up and kind of like, you know, on other ends of the table.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, he asked someone else the same thing with his other hand pointing at that guy. The way he was pointing, it was as if he had like two guns in his hands. you know, like, so I said, oh, whoa, whoa, you're asking pretty aggressively there. And he didn't realize what he was doing. And then he thought it was just hilarious. And I'm like, hold on, keep the pose. You come here, the other third guy with the hat, which they were buddies. And then the three of us basically had, you know, the two, you know, guns in our hands, but we had cards instead. So we had the guns, we had the cards in our hand as if they're guns, pointing to each other, like the Spider-Man meme. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I do.
So I had someone else take a picture of that too, which is what I sent you. And then I also did my
What that is? Okay.
Yeah. I also did my name with the, just my first name, but with the emoji of the cowboy hat, the horse, and the cactus.
That is funny, dude.
On theme. I was ready to go.
That is funny. The good, the bad, and the ugly right there.
A crime. Definitely not the bad one. I might be the ugly one.
A crime is about to be committed.
Yes, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about the pre-release. So Friday, there was, I think they went over cap. Initially, cap was 32, but they had like a couple people waiting on standby, and another event didn't have as many people as they would like to have. So they opened up to not have a cap. So instead of 32, we had 37.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not that much more, but these are people that were just standing around on standby. So they're like, all right, you guys are here. Let's go. Open my sealed pool, my first promo that I got was Aven Interrupter. The one white, 2/2 flash flying. This card does so much work. It's like the white counterspell that they could set into, you know, put the spell into exile.
Yeah.
And it becomes plotted, and then spells your opponent cast from Graveverse or from exile cost 2 more to cast.
Wasn't it like for only 2 or something like that?
3 mana. This was 3 mana. But this bird does a lot of work. There is another, I forget, is a green, Rambling Possum, I think it is. Yeah, whenever it attacks while saddled, it gets +1/+2 until end of turn. Then you may return any number of creatures that saddled it this turn to their owner's hands. So I saddled Aven Interrupter on top of my possum, which sounds strange. That way, Aven Interrupter kept coming back to my hand, and I kept countering spells. I locked someone out of the game, and they were so frustrated, and they're like, okay, that's busted. That's absolutely busted.
I saw some guy open his pre-release, and I think Thrilled Mystic and Mystical Snake are both in the same set.
Thrilled Mystic? Which one is that again?
It's the same thing as Mystical Snake, except for it's one.
Thrilled Mystic is not in this set.
It's not? Okay, but Mystical Snake is.
Yes, or Mystic Snake or whatever it is.
Yeah, Mystic Snake, yeah.
Yeah.
Great card to blink, by the way. So you're like, yeah, I'll counter that and bring it back to my hand.
Yeah. My first pre-release, I ended up going, I won the first match. I had a draw in the second match just because I won the first game, they won the second, and the third one just went to time. We talked about it afterwards, and we kind of agreed that I might have taken that if I had an extra 2-3 turns to go. Because they were just kind of drawing duds, and I just kind of kept getting more gas. But they were at like 28 life at the time when I finally was drawing. You know, I finally had War Presence. But either way, that was a draw. And then my third match, I won 2-0. So technically, I was undefeated.
Mm.
And then my second pre-release, my pool was much weaker. But it still felt pretty good. I ended up going 1 win, 2 loss as far as my matches went. One of my losses, I got Cruel Ultimatumed.
Oh, nice.
Now, not that I didn't get the card.
I played it on you, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Sorry, I'm rooting for that guy here. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if you forget what this card does,
I know what it does.
For blue, blue, black, 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 red, red. So 7 colored mana. Yep. Target opponent sacrifices a creature, discards 3 cards, then loses 5 life. Then, whoever casts it, you return a creature card from your graveyard to your hand, draw 3 cards, gain 5 life. That's a massive swing. Massive swing. Like, it was basically like a 7-4 wind me. So I clearly lost the game, and they just outvalued me in the other game. And the other match that I lost... Oh, that one, the same match with Cruel Ultimatum, they just had like spot removal, spot removal, spot removal. Like, I couldn't keep up with that.
Yeah, it was a lot of that. That I lost,
the other game that I lost was just a very grindy, very incremental advantage that, well, I guess in my case, incremental disadvantage. It just kept slipping away from me. And I just had some mana issues on that one, and I just lost that one. But at that point, it didn't really matter for me anyway.
Yeah,
it was all X1 games.
Yeah, the experience I had was lackluster. So it was about 14 people on Friday night, because we do Friday night 6:30, then we'll do Saturday 2:30 and 6:30.
Okay.
And Sunday 2:30 and 6:30.
So yeah, sounds like what we do too.
So on Friday it was a grand slam, you know, maybe 20 people. And then on Saturday the first game had 14 people and the last game had 12 people. On Sunday, nobody came for the first game. It was all like free commander players, right? And I'm advertising for it, and I'm pointing it out and trying to get people interested. And some stood around for the second game. But ultimately, it was two people. And I talked to the one guy, and I was like, hey, man, I'll get you in there for free, you know, and just give you a kit for free. And he's like, no, not tonight, John. And then I go in the back, and I'm like, man, I don't know what we're going to do. Have these two guys just battle out themselves or what? And then my JJ was like, hey, go ahead and do it. You do it. And I'm like, me? Okay. And I go out there, dude. And I gave it my best, but the box I had nothing in it. You know, nothing, Onique. Sure, the mythic rares, but there was no synergy. There was no support. There was nothing. So my best idea was like, okay, I'm going to take two colors and put them together. Mm-hmm. And then even that wasn't enough, man. You know, the pool was just like, okay, I have 10 black cards and I've got, you know, a couple of black white cards, maybe black red cards, you know, a Mardu I had going on. I could have done just Rakdos, but no, I had to do Mardu because there wasn't enough. I had to put white cards in there. So I'm definitely in three colors now, you know. That was just forced, and it was not good cards to be forced with. So I was just ultimately, what's going to be my better decision here, you know? And man, I got whooped, dude. I don't think I won a single game.
Really?
And with four people playing, because some guy came in at the last minute, it was two rounds. And I was glad, but at the same time, sad, you know?
Yeah. Not the best showing. Sealed is always... Yeah. I feel like Sealed is a lot more difficult.
Well, I love Sealed, and I want to play it on Arena a lot. You know, a lot. It's very addicting. And I'm saving some gems and gold coins for tomorrow. I think it gets released.
Yeah, Thunder Junction, all the goodies is going to release on Tuesday, April 16th.
Nice.
So by the time you guys listen to this, it'll probably be live already.
Yep. I've got packs built up. They've got a little lock icon on them.
Oh, yeah. Same.
That's cute.
Yeah, it's like, not yet.
I'm like, okay.
A little bit more.
I got like 20 packs built up. How many you got?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I have some pre-release codes here that I can, you know, easily just use, but I haven't done that yet.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I forgot about that. You get six free packs, right?
Yeah. I think since Murders, so like a set ago, you can use up to 5 pre-release codes.
What? I was told it was 2, so now it's 5, huh?
Was it 2?
Yeah, it was 2 originally.
I mean, let me see. Oh, here. Yeah. Thanks for coming to the pre-release. Use this code to unlock 6 Outlaws of Thunder Junction booster packs, blah, blah, blah. Then you got the code. Then in the bottom of it, Wizard account required, limit 5 codes per account.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, I'll find some old codes, some cards somewhere and read it off to you. I don't know if it said 2, but it used to be 2, man.
Thunder, this is Murders. What is this? I don't even know what code this one is.
Well, it does look like there's another thing we got to talk about, too, which is archetype types or themes. Is that from the Outlaws for Thunder Junction?
Yeah, for archetypes.
There's a cheat sheet that comes in the play booster box.
Is there?
Yep. Did you know that? See if it's
in the play booster box. No. I didn't mess with any. The OTG. Only boxes I opened were the 2 pre-release kits.
Play booster.
Does it say the archetypes?
Yeah, it does. You got it from here, homie.
As most of us know at this point, each gold-colored uncommon card is known as a signpost uncommon. These are what the color pair wants to do. These are 2-color. cards, not like three or four or anything. Four would be weird. This set happens to have two uncommons per color pair, which means there are exactly 20 uncommons in this set for two colored gold cards. So I'm going to go over the color pairings for each of them. So for white blue, what you want to do is, well, let me read the cards first. First one is Gem Lightfoot Sky Explorer. 2 white blue for 3/3 flying vigilance at the beginning of your end step. If you haven't cast a spell from your hand this turn, draw a card. She's telling you, hey, this is what my color pair wants to do. And if you look at the other card, it's kind of the same thing. Wrangler of the Damned. 3 white blue for 1/4 flash. At the beginning of your end step, if you haven't cast a spell from your hand this turn, create a 2/2 white spirit token with flying. So both of them are saying, hey, don't cast spells from your hand. Which sounds really weird until you remember, wait a minute, that's what plot is all about. White blue is a plot color. You want to be plotting stuff, because when you plot a card, you don't cast it. It's not an activated ability or anything. It's a special action that you just simply move it from your hand into exile and it becomes plotted.
And you can cast it later for free.
Yes, because you're casting it from exile, not mm-hmm. from your hand.
Yeah.
So if you're plotting any card and then casting it from exile on a following turn or on a later turn, then you're not casting anything from your hand and you draw a card. Maybe mm-hmm. it's another plot card. So you could just continue fueling these two cards. You keep getting these tokens and drawing some more cards. The other one, Wrangler of the Damned, also wants you to do things, or actually both of them, cards of flash help a lot. Instance, of course. Activated abilities go a long way because, you know, it keeps you busy, so you're not casting things in your turn. That's all about white blue. Next up, blue black. So let me read these two and you can quickly find out what it's trying to do. 1 blue black for an enchantment. Whenever Intimidation Campaign enters a battlefield, each opponent loses 1 life, you gain a life, and you draw a card. All right, fine. Whenever you commit a crime, alarms are going off. Well, besides that, whenever you commit a crime, you may return Intimidation Campaign to its owner's hand. So commit a crime, put this back in your hand, and recast it for value. The other card, Lazav, Familiar Stranger. 1 blue black for a 1/4 legendary creature shapeshifter. Whenever you commit a crime, hey, we heard this before, put a +1/+1 counter on Lazav, Familiar Stranger. Then you may exile a card from your graveyard. If a creature card was exiled this way, you may have Lazav become a copy of that card until end of turn. This ability only triggers once each turn. So both of them are all about committing crimes. That's what blue-black wants to do. Commit crimes. Counterspell is a crime because you're targeting something that they control, which is an object on the stack. That's a crime.
That bouncing hurts creatures. My feelings. I'm sorry. That hurts my feelings.
You've been committing crimes since day one. So you're just now getting rewarded for it. But yeah, blue-black commits crimes. Anyway, bouncing cards, you know, the removal, -X, -X. Targeting anything in their graveyard. Like, then you may exile a card from... Well, actually, Lazav doesn't target the graveyard because it says any player. But if he's like, target player discards a card, that's a crime. Exile target card in a library. If you're targeting theirs, that's a crime. Yeah, so anything like that, you want to commit crimes and profit off of it. Red, black. So next one, again, very obvious once you read these two cards. At knife point, 1 black red for an enchantment. As long as your turn, outlaws you control have first strike. And again, in parentheses, assassins, mercenaries, pirates, rogues, warlocks. Those are all outlaws. Whenever you commit a crime, there's a little bit of bleed over here, create a 1/1 red mercenary creature token with tap target creature you control gets +1/+0 until end of turn. Activate only as a sorcery. And that ability triggers only once each turn. I've just abbreviated them to merc tokens. And everyone already kind of knows that all of the mercenary or merc tokens, they all have the ability that says tap it, something else gets 1/0, only as a sorcery. Don't make the mistakes that two of my opponents did. to try to use it as a combat trick. It's only as a sorcery. Don't forget that. But it is a mercenary creature type, which is an outlaw. So it fuels itself. Then you have Vile Smasher, Gleeful Grenadier. Red, black for a 3-2 Goblin Mercenary. It's another mercenary outlaw creature. Whenever another outlaw enters the battlefield under your control, Vile Smasher deals 1 damage to target opponent. Which is a crime. Because you're dealing damage to a target opponent. Which means at knife points will give you a mercenary token. Which means Vile Smasher triggers. These two can, they don't go infinite, but they do trigger off of each other. Don't forget at knife point says only once each turn, because otherwise this will go infinite and you just win the game on a spot. Red green. Again, very obvious. 2 red green for a 4-4 plant mercenary. This is called Cactus Folk Sure Shot. Reach War 2. At the beginning of combat on your turn, other creatures you control with power 4 or greater gain trample and haste until end of turn. And then the other one, Jolene, Plundering Pugilist, 1 red black for a 4-2. Whenever you attack with one or more creatures with power 4 or greater, create a treasure token. And then an extra ability, 1 in red, sacrifice a treasure. She punches something for 1 damage. Have you seen the art on this card, by the way?
No.
Let me link this to you real quick.
I appreciate you, man.
She's literally uppercutting someone, and all you see from that other someone is their boots and like their dust trail that she, you know, just kind of like a cartoonish uppercut out of the screen.
I see it.
This took a while for me to see like what was going on, because I was initially just staring at this awkward snake horse thing that she's mounting on. I mean,
look at the size of that arm, number one.
Oh, she's a big girl. She is strong. I think she's from Campana. But yeah, red, black, power 4 or greater. That's a very, very obvious. Sorry, red, green. I keep saying that. Red, black is you want a bunch of outlaws. Then you got green, white. This is you want all about mounts and saddles. 1 green, white is for a 1-4 hippogriff mount. This one is called Congregation Griff. That's tough to say. Flying lifelink, which is already pretty nice stats right there. Whenever Congregation Griff attacks while saddled, it gets plus X until end of turn, where X is the number of mounts you control. It itself has saddle 3. And if you forget what saddle is, it's basically crew, but you're not turning an artifact into a creature. With saddle, the creature is already a creature. You don't need to saddle to attack. But if you do, it becomes stronger. It gains an extra ability. It does something bonus. Like I said, whenever it attacks while saddled, it gets buffed pretty strong. Then you have Miriam, Herd Whisperer, for green-white, so 2 mana for a 3-2. As long as it's your turn, mounts and vehicles you control have hexproof. There isn't really a vehicle theme in this, but this is just so that it's not so parasitic to where this card only cares about cards from the set. If you want to splash around and have some vehicles from other stuff, go for it. And she also has whenever a mount or vehicle you control attacks, put a plus one counter on it. It doesn't have to be saddled. As long as you have a mount and just attack with it. Don't forget, mount is a creature type. It's not some weird artifact type or whatever. It's a creature type. So if you have a mount creature that you just turn sideways with, not even saddled, you're going to get the counter. That's nice. So these are just the allied cards. Did you see any of these in action, John, at the pre-release, or kind of have an idea like, oh, okay, that's what you're trying to do?
I'll be honest, no, none of them.
Which one sounds sweet to you?
They all sound sweet to me, actually. You know, I mean, it's just because I play so many formats.
Yeah, I mean, to me, they all sound like, it feels like the support is there for all of these, and it's not asking you to do anything crazy. Maybe the white-blue one is a bit tough to, like, don't cast spells from your hand, and that's going to feel a little bit awkward. But if you build your deck properly, and if you have enough plot cards, this should feel pretty clean to you. Blue-black has committed crimes. That's what we've all been doing since day one. Red-black just have a bunch of creatures. I heard, so off the top of your head, yeah, you probably heard me already say it a couple times. John, what are the five creature types for outlaws?
For alpha?
Outlaws.
Oh, mercenaries. I can't remember.
Someone said that they came up with an acronym for those five creature types.
Really?
You know what the acronym is?
What?
Warm P. W-A-R-M and then the letter P. You can think of it as something else if you like, which is clearly what it's alluding to. But if you think of those five letters, what's a creature type with a W?
Warrior, warlock. Assassin.
Warlocks.
Warlock, assassin, rebels, renegades.
Rogues.
Rogue.
And then M is mercenaries.
Of course. And, P, and then P, I can't remember.
Pirate.
Pirates, there you go.
Yeah. So if you remember the warm P, you'd maybe remember the five creature types for outlaws.
Wow.
So that's half of the archetypes. Let's go to the other half. White, black. This is Baron Bertram Greywater. Legendary creature, vampire nobles, 3/4. Whenever one or more tokens enter the battlefield under your control, create a 1/1 black vampire rogue creature token with lifelink.
Nice. Nice.
This ability only triggers once each turn. So whenever you make a token, you make another token. Sacrifice, or one in a black, sacrifice another creature or artifact, draw a card. And then the other one, Ruthless Lawbringer, 1 white-black for a 3/2. Whenever it enters the battlefield, you may sacrifice another creature. When you do, destroy target permanent. Non-land permanent. This is all about sacrifice, but it could also be all about making tokens. So you're probably going to be doing a little bit of each because you definitely want some sacrifice fodder, any way to make some tokens. But yeah, this is basically just tokens and sacrifice. Then you got red, what is this? Red, green. No. Blue, red. Colors are hard. Blue, red, you have Chrom. Violent Cacophony. Legendary creature, zombie horror with flying. So 2/3. Whenever you cast your second spell each turn, put a +/+ or counter on Chrom and draw a card. Then for slick sequence is blue red for an instant. It deals 2 damage to any target. If you cast another spell this turn, draw a card. This just wants you to cast multiple spells per turn. Of course, the goal being 2. You could do that with plot very easily. So you'd plot something now, and then the next turn, you can cast that from exile for 1 spell and then just use the mana for another card, like slick sequence. Hit something for 2, draw a card. Then you got Golgari. 3 red-green for Badlands Revival. This is a sorcery. Return up to 1 creature card. Return up to 1 target creature card from a graveyard to the battlefield. And return up to 1 target permanent card from your graveyard to your hand. So this gets a creature into the battlefield and then some other card, maybe another creature, into your hand. How do the creatures get there? Self-mill. So this is your self-mill deck. Then you got Honest Rutstein. 1 black-green for a 3/2. Whenever he enters a battlefield, return to a creature card from a graveyard to your hand. Creatures you cast cost 1 less to cast. There are a couple of cards, both in green and black, that self-mill, fill up the graveyard any way that you can. I mean, of course, just getting into combat, willing to trade, puts creatures in the battlefield, puts creatures in the graveyard. So any way to put them in the graveyard, this is what you want to do. We got 2 more archetypes to go over. So we have Boros, so 2 red-white for Eartha Joe, Frontier Mentor. Whenever Eartha Joe enters the battlefield, create a Merc token. That's the one, you know, so 1/1 with 1/+/+0 to end a turn as a sorcery. And then whenever you activate an ability that targets a creature or player, copy the ability you may choose in targets. So your Merc tokens now do double duty. She's pretty nice. And then the other card, Form a Posse. X red white. Create X 1/1 red Merc tokens with the same ability. My opponent did this extra 4 And while they're 1/1s, they were kind of annoying because he just attacked with one creature that happened to have first strike. So he did all of those stupid Merc tokens on the one creature. And it was like a 5/2 first strike. He had that goblin or pirate or whatever that is. So that was just really tough to deal with. And then the whole time he still had these little Merc tokens on his battlefield. Sure, they were tapped, but it was really, really annoying. Last archetype is Doc Orlok, Rizzle the Genius. For a green and blue, is a 2/3 bear druid. Spells you cast from your graveyard or from exile cost 2 less to cast. Plotting cards from your hand cost 2 less to use, I suppose, because it's not an activated ability, you're not casting it. So plot's cheaper. This wants you to plot a lot. It's pretty similar to blue-white, but blue-white's a little bit more on like just also cast some sorceries and some instants and flash stuff. Then your other card, Make Your Own Luck. 3 green blue for a sorcery. Look at the top 3 cards of your library. You may exile a non-land card from them. If you do, it becomes plotted. And then out of those 3, the other 2 you're putting in your hand. So this is basically draw 3 and then cast one for free on a following turn, which of course is very nice. So those are your 10 archetypes. I'm worried that green blue might be the weakest, which it's kind of like, yeah, I'm familiar with this. But we haven't drafted this set yet. Maybe some LGSs have done a draft already out there. Did your LGS do any drafts or was it all sealed?
Just the sealed pre-releases.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, same with mine. But draft is coming up on Friday, of course. I'm going to be there for the official release. You can start practicing draft on Arena if you like, because that's definitely what I'm doing, and I know you're going to do that too. But this is the 10 archetypes that you should keep an eye out for as you start drafting, as you know, cards kept passing around. Which was the best? Which was the worst? I don't know. Everything does look very well supported, though. So just be sure when you're drafting, you're picking cards that support these themes and not just throwing a generic card in a deck because it matches the color. Like this deck, this set feels like a well-built synergistic deck will do a lot better than just a deck with like a random bomb or two in it. Because the uncommons are powerful and they can, for the most part, it can keep up with an average rare. You're drafting on Friday, I assume, right? Your LGS?
They're going to be doing draft normally. So my story is a little weird because it really goes by the community, okay? They mainly want to draft on Wednesday, and then we do a commander draft on Friday. And then it'll do a chaos draft on Friday. Okay. And then, or it goes to a vote if they don't want to do chaos. Sometimes it's chaos. Sometimes they like Dominaria United, right? The Saturday one is commander draft. Like Baldur's Gate primarily is what we've been doing on Saturdays.
Okay.
It's fun though, man. And when the people do it, they're like, I forgot how fun this is. And it's like, duh. You know, it's an old set by now, but you know, it helps sell those packs too. I think, you know.
So, I mean, I do have my own personal list of the top 3 commons and uncommons per set, but right now it just feels like they're so close together as like, well, anyone else's list is going to be very similar to mine, to other stuff that's out there, or just completely different because they're so close. Like, it's not necessarily a clear cut 1, 2, 3. I mean, maybe, you know, an individual card will be, but for example, like my number 3 card, I can give it like a 7.5 out of 10, but someone else's number 3 card could be like a 7.6 out of 10. You know, like these cards can be so similar in power level. We don't really know until we start playing with them, because maybe blue green is just bad and you should just avoid drafting them. That could mean that the plot cards for those colors would just fall into blue white, and then that archetype becomes more powerful just by nature. You know, like, it's literally the Wild West right now. give it 2-3 weeks once the dust settles. We'll see where everything lands.
You know, it's easy to say don't play with green blue until you pull an Oko out of one of the packs, you know?
Yeah, that's very fair.
Then you're like, I'm playing four colors. It's like, why?
Oh, I don't know if I would. Well, I don't know. Because, I mean, don't forget, this set has the bonus sheets in it. So you're going to be pulling cards from Breaking News, which is the things that kind of look like the jailbreak or the posters or whatever. You have cards from the vault, which is, you know, the, I don't even know what it's called, but where the card of the week came from. And then you have the cards from the list, which is things like I pulled a desert, like just classic desert that was nice, from Arabian Nights.
Yep.
Man, I thought that was a Prismatic Vista. And I got so excited for like a half a second and I realized, oh, it's just this card.
So like, I think it's cool too with the people out here in Arizona, because it's like the cactus pin. They didn't send my local game store too many, so we gave them to the winners of the tournaments, you know?
Yeah.
But the cactus theme and the desert theme is just right on out here.
I got a cactus pin too. My LGS was doing it if you do 2 pre-releases. I don't know if that's the same for all, but it was just like stuff they can hand out. So I got my little cactus pin. But yeah, this set does look fun to draft. It might be bomb heavy. It's going to be rare heavy. Definitely going to be rare heavy. And it could be a format that might be dictated by bombs, but I honestly don't think so. At least I hope it's not what is going to happen. Like I said, I did the math. You could be opening up to 5 rares in a single play booster. Someone at the pre-release ended up getting 4 in a single one because of like all the bonus sheets and the wild card slot, and a foil was rare too. So it's going to be explosive. We'll say that much.
All right, guys, that's going to be it for this week's episode. And I'm still in talks with one of the famous artists. A female, we gave a lot of hints. If I've already let the name out of the bag, I forgot.
I think I forget too.
Yes, that's okay. We're going to get her on the podcast, and I'm just going through the contact, you know, to get a hold of her and make sure that it melds well with our schedule on Monday night. Or if it's going to be, hey, it's a Wednesday at this time, Monique, we got to do it, you know what I mean? So we'll just figure it out as we go on. That's all. That's all we can do.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to that, man. I'm going to be doing a lot of research on her, and that way I'll be prepared just like I do with the other guests. And, you know, for everybody out there that's still doing pre-release, hopefully your local game store has got enough material to do another one next weekend. If you didn't, or if you want to continue the excitement, I know that I'm ready to move forward. I'm getting old product in the store, like Kaladesh and Aether Revolt, War of the Sparks, Dominaria. You know, a few things like Masters 25, Commander Legends. And we're talking box that are sealed, you know? It's cool because we bought some stuff, you know. And with the play boosters thing, I'm looking at packs like Kaladesh that just said boosters. They didn't say draft boosters. They didn't say nothing, Nick, just boosters.
Oh, yeah.
And
that didn't have a collector booster or a set booster.
It did. Just... It said mythical or something. War of the Sparks definitely did. But Kaladesh and Aether Revolt just said boosters. And to see a play booster, and to know that it's one less product the store's got to buy, it's one less product the customer has to go, I don't want this one or that one, what's the difference, right? And it saves time for the people selling it too, like me. It's like, oh, it's just married together, you know? The play boosters we had originally was just Murders at Karloff Manor. And when you go to an option of, we throw an event on every Thursday night, a commander event, and I will charge somebody $6 for a draft pack, which is weird, but you're in an event for price support, right?
Yeah.
And I'll do $8 for the set pack. There was never a play booster. What's the difference? Well, there really isn't too much of a difference. We sell them for like $6.60. So I just made it kind of funny and been like, it's the one in the middle at $7. So people that are smart are usually going, let me get the $7 one. But if they want a draft, they're paying $6. If they want a set, they're paying $8, right? Yeah. I'm not going to change that. But I did add a little excitement to it to where it's like, wait, this is a no-brainer. They're both put together. Let me get the $7 one. So maybe we'll just eventually migrate to where the whole event's just $7. And when it's like, oh, the only play booster you have is Murders, it's like, yeah, for now. And now I'm happy to announce we've got Outlaws for Thunder Junction.
Nice.
Not too much flavor, but we got 2 flavors to choose from. You know, back in the day, there was only chocolate and vanilla. Now look at Baskin-Robbins, 31 delicious flavors. But I don't want to sound like a broken record. I don't want to say goodbye too much. But I will say, until next time, keep spell slinging.